again, and welcome to Podcast DX, the show that brings you interviews with people just like you, whose lives were forever changed by a medical diagnosis.
I'm Lita. Ron won't be with us today.
And I'm Jean Marie.
Collectively, we're the hosts of Podcast DX.
On today's show, we're diving into a lesser-known but very serious illness called tularemia. It's also known as rabbit fever. Tularemia was first recognized as a human disease in 1911 in Tularemia County, California, hence the name. It's also called by its scientific name, Francisella tularensis bacterium, and is considered one of the most infectious pathogens known to science.
Well, just to put that into perspective, it only takes 10 bacteria to cause an infection. That's why it's also classified as a Category A bioterrorism agent by the CDC. So, yes, it's rare, but it's dangerous. And it's not just found in the U.S. It's been reported in Europe, Russia, China, and Japan also.
In the United States, tularemia is uncommon, with an average of 126 cases reported per year, mostly in rural areas.
States like Arkansas, Missouri, Oklahoma, and Kansas tend to have the highest number of cases. Mm-hmm. And there's a fun but concerning headline: a dead rabbit tested positive for the tularemia in central Illinois recently.
How do people contract tularemia? Unfortunately, there are a lot of ways, including handling infected animals, especially rabbits, hares, and rodents, being bitten by infected ticks, deer flies, or mosquitoes, drinking or bathing in contaminated water, inhaling contaminated dust or an aerosol version of it, even mowing over a dead animal.
Wow. Well, let's be clear. It's not contagious between humans. You cannot catch it from somebody who's infected.
And you might now be asking yourself, well, what are the symptoms? And the symptoms depend on how the bacteria entered your body. But some of the most common signs and symptoms include a sudden fever, chills, headache, fatigue, swollen lymph nodes, skin ulcers, sore throat, and it could be also like pneumonia if you inhale it. There's actually six types of tularemia, and each one shows up a little differently. For example, ulceral glandular tularemia causes skin ulcers and swollen lymph nodes. And then pneumonic tularemia affects the lungs and can actually be rather life-threatening.
Well, some cases look like the flu at first, so it's often misdiagnosed unless your doctor knows to look for it.
And this is important because this is why one of the reasons why we need to keep up with medical research and funding, because diagnosis is typically made by blood tests or cultures from the ulcers, a sample from the lymph nodes or from respiratory secretions. But because tularemia is rare, many doctors may not test for it right away. And that's why sharing your exposure history, for example, if you handled a wild animal recently or have been bitten by a tick or been in an area where there's been, you know, instances of tularemia and you were bitten by mosquitoes, and then prevention of those things as well. But it's important to let your healthcare provider know.
Right. If left untreated, tularemia can cause serious complications such as pneumonia, meningitis, liver damage, and sepsis, which is a life-threatening systemic infection.
But with early diagnosis and proper treatment, the prognosis is typically good. Tularemia is treated with antibiotics because it's a bacterial infection, and specifically streptomycin and gentamicin in more serious cases, or doxycycline, or other, you know, like there are a whole wide range of antibiotics that can be utilized depending on the method of, you know, the method you, how you contracted the disease
and
how
what body part it's
right.
Using?
Well,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, treatment typically lasts for 10 to 21 days, depending on the severity and the route of infection. It's important to start antibiotics as soon as possible to avoid long-term complications. So if the doctor isn't testing for it and they think it's just the flu, would they be likely to get antibiotics?
You'd have to ask your healthcare provider.
Okay.
But if they suspect a bacterial infection, they're likely to provide you with antibiotics. And if you are prescribed antibiotics, make sure
you take the whole thing.
Right. You complete the course of the antibiotics, and you let your healthcare provider know if they're not effective, because different bacteria, you know, they might have to switch what you're taking, and make sure you know whether or not you're allergic to anything as well. And preventing tularemia comes down to avoiding exposure. So use insect repellent, and we've talked about it before, like pre-treating what you're going to wear if you know that you're going to be outdoors. Wear gloves when handling wild or dead animals. Don't drink untreated water or swim in it, because some people swim in the water and then it can get into cuts. It can also, sometimes you accidentally swallow, or you can inhale the vapors. And avoid mowing over any dead animals. So check an area before you start mowing. And protect your pets that roam outdoors from fleas and ticks.
Okay. Well, there's no licensed vaccine available right now for the general public, although research is ongoing, or at least it was a couple of months ago.
Yeah. And speaking of research, scientists are working on new vaccines for tularemia, and some of these are being developed as part of a biodefense initiative. There's also work being done to improve rapid detection tests so that doctors can identify tularemia faster and start treatment sooner.
It's one of those diseases that reminds us why good surveillance systems and public health reporting are so important.
Another interesting detail is how tularemia outbreaks sometimes follow patterns in nature. For example, large rabbit die-offs in an area can be a warning sign for increased human risk. But if we're not funding and providing, the Natural Resources Department with modes of testing and reporting, then we won't find out about it until it's too late.
Mm-hmm.
Wildlife biologists often collaborate with health departments to monitor these shifts. And if tularemia is detected in rabbits, squirrels, or ticks, local authorities may issue alerts or close certain parks to reduce the chance of human infection. And you may actually see tick tubes where they're collecting ticks, and that's what they're doing. They're testing those ticks to see what they're carrying. In fact, there was a well-documented outbreak in Colorado back in 2015, where multiple people fell ill after mowing lawns and doing yard work. And investigators later found that tularemia was circulating heavily amongst the local rabbit population. And what made the case so striking was how quickly airborne transmission occurred just from stirring up infected dust. Hmm. So you have to remember, when you're cutting the grass, you're also stirring up the feces from animals.
Would it be good to wear a mask?
I would assume that it would be good to wear a mask and hearing protection and eye protection, and also closed footwear whenever you're cutting the grass.
Okay.
And long pants. And it's a reminder that this isn't just about hunters or hikers, but actually it can be, everybody in suburbia can be at risk as well. And monitoring and, being careful and letting your healthcare provider know, and then making sure that your healthcare provider is reporting things, it all comes into play.
Okay.
Working together, we can make things, if you work together, then it makes life easier on everyone.
And there's growing concern that climate change could increase tularemia cases, because warmer temperatures mean longer tick and fly seasons and expanded habitats for the animals that carry Francisella tularensis bacteria. Regions that haven't seen cases in decades may begin to report them again. Some researchers are already seeing a northward shift in where tularemia is found in the U.S., including states like Michigan and Wisconsin. And like Jean said earlier, there was one case in central Illinois.
And that's why public awareness matters. Most people haven't heard of tularemia until it's, makes a headline or affects them personally, or ends up in their medical chart. So local health departments and veterinary services and park rangers, they're often the first line of defense when outbreaks begin. So we need to support them. And by recognizing warning signs early and promoting preventional strategies, communities can stop tularemia before it spreads. Education is always one of our best tools. And, there's tick tape, there's tick tubes to, eradicate ticks in an area. But, it's starting on a local level is always a great idea.
Mm-hmm.
And then communicating. This podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment, and always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regime. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking because of something you heard on this podcast. The views and opinions of the guests and hosts on this show do not necessarily reflect the views of Podcast DX LLC.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Podcast DX. Stay safe out there, especially if you're hiking, camping, or mowing the lawn. Till next week, protect yourself, your pets, and maybe avoid touching wild rabbits.
And if you ever hear the phrase rabbit fever, now you know it's not just a cartoon joke. It's real. Stay healthy, everyone.
Bye-bye.